Uganda now put up the vast majority of funds and run their own private campaigns to elect someone who will do their bidding. So far, of nearly $400 million raised to back candidates of either party in next year's race, half of the money has come from a pool of only about 400 people, and two-thirds of their cash went not to candidates, but into corporate-run super PACs. For Republicans, 77% of the funds have gone to super PACs. This is because the Supreme Court decreed in its reckless Citizen United decision that these non-candidate campaigns can take unlimited sums of money directly from corporations. Therefore, a very few wealthy powers can pour money into these murky political operations and gain unwarranted plutocratic power over the election process. Of the $37 million in the PAC backing Ted Cruz, for example, $36 million was pumped in by only three interests, a New York hedge fund operator, a corporate plunderer living in Puerto Rico, and the owners of a fracking operation who pocketed billions from the explosive use of this destructive drilling technology. But one of these new players assures us that they're not buying candidates for corporate and personal gain, but, quote, primarily for a love of economic freedom. This is Jim Hightower saying, sure, sweetheart. All you want is the, quote, economic freedom to pollute, defraud, exploit, rob, and otherwise harm anything and anyone standing between you and another dollar in profit.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Say hey, it is Monday. The time is 5:33. You're listening to Say Hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program. My name is Jake, joined as always by Noobs. Noobs, how you doing?
Sweating, man.
Sweating. Sweating to the oldies.
Yes.
I see that you brought your pal along, which
yep.
is always nice.
Yeah, my partner in crime is here.
Yep.
A little stroll through downtown. Have trouble leaving at home these days.
Yeah.
Unattended.
Yeah.
So it's it's a work in progress.
Noobs' partner in crime has four legs, by
yes.
the way.
Yeah. many of you who are listening may know him.
Yeah, that's right. And we had a wild weekend in the sports world, Noobs. Lots to talk about.
Yeah.
So maybe we should first talk about one of the more outstanding, entertaining college football games I've watched in a while.
That was a good one.
That was
Cal Texas.
And it was pretty cool also in the sense that it was a national game with two unranked teams, but two teams that are kind of making noise for the first time in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Texas trying to get back up there with a new quarterback, new coaching, new AD. Cal, who's perennially not very good, haven't been relevant since Aaron Rodgers was mm-hmm. there. But two unranked teams in the spotlight on Saturday, and the game did not disappoint.
No, Cal doesn't quite have the pedigree that Texas does, but I mean they, you know, definitely during the Aaron Rodgers era and previous times, they've have had some really good teams.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, like you just mentioned, is struggling ever since they parted ways with Mac, their coach, who had taken them to national championships, including that crazy win over USC back in 06. But yeah, they got a new coach coming over from Louisville. They just fired the AD.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously a lot of questions swirling around the coaching, whether or not Charlie Strong is going to last.
Yep.
This is his second year. But that quarterback they got, Hurd, he's a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
He looks like he's going to be the real deal. He had the most yards from scrimmage in the history of the University of Texas on Saturday.
Which is pretty wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the game itself was just highly entertaining.
It was.
Comebacks.
It was. And from Cal's perspective, they were 1-11 2 years ago. It's now Sonny Dykes coaching. Tedford was there forever for too long. They were 5-7 last year, but Jared Goff, who's a junior, has been this guy that has not been on the national radar because it's Cal, because it's Pac-12 and they haven't been good. But since the day Jared Goff came in, he's one of those guys where you're like, whoa, this guy's good.
Yeah.
He may be playing for a team that's not hot, but this dude looks like a real quarterback. And now, at this point, he's finally on the national radar. And when he does come out, he's expected to be one of the top picks in the draft.
Yeah, he's got that prototypical NFL physique. Mm-hmm. Real quick, it was Mac Brown was the coach of Texas. It was escaping my mind. But back to Cal, yeah, that kid looks like he's the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a couple mistakes there in the game, but that's just kind of what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
The growing pains of it.
He's got a great arm. He's efficient.
Yeah.
He's pretty heady. And he's tall.
And I also liked how fired up he got. I don't know if you noticed late in the first half, Cal was on Texas's goal line, and Texas was having a trouble with substitution.
Yeah.
And one of the kids was about to run out, but he knew he didn't have time to run out, so he faked an injury.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, they didn't get penalized for it or whatever, but they had to get charged a timeout.
Right.
But it's Goff, right?
Goff,
yeah. He turned around and looked at the ref, and he looked at the Texas sideline and put up his fist. I don't know if you saw that part.
I actually missed that moment right at the end of the half.
He was fired up, man, because it was like he knew they had a good play and that they were going to score.
Right.
That the only way Texas was going to avoid that was to fake an injury.
Right.
So I really like the competitive fire that saw out of him.
Yeah. And he's a Bay Area kid.
Mm-hmm.
His dad was a major league catcher. His dad went to Cal. I mean, he's totally like he's of the area. It's pretty cool to watch him play.
Nice.
And even though Cal has stunk the joint out over the last few years and many times historically, they haven't won the Rose Bowl since I think the 40s, something like that. They produce a lot of really good NFL players.
Didn't Marshawn Lynch go there?
Marshawn Lynch, among many others in recent years.
Yeah.
I mean, they produce a lot of NFL players despite not being a cream of the crop team in the standings. But anyway, Cal comes in 2-0. Texas comes in,
1-1. They had gotten rocked at Notre Dame.
Right. And then it just turns into a shootout. Cal winds up going up 45-24 in the fourth, and you're thinking, okay, this game's over.
Right.
But Cal's defense over the last couple seasons has actually been historically bad. They're one of only six teams in college football history, I believe a year or so ago, to average 38 points scored and average 38 points given up.
Wow.
So their offense has been good. Their defense has been horrible. And then we saw that defense start to give in a bit to Hurd, who was having an explosive game. But to make it 45-24... we had a ripoff of a 74-yard touchdown. Let's have a listen to how that sounded.
And they hand it off to Muhammad. And watch him go. He's a sprinter. Whoa. Kalfani Muhammad to the house. Touchdown, California. 74 yards.
And you're thinking right there that it's probably over, but it was far from over. Texas comes back, storming back, led all the way by Jerod Hurd, who looks like one of those kind of hybrid college quarterback guys that he's kind of run first, but also has a pretty decent arm.
Yeah.
You know, some guy's just going to rack up a crazy amount of all-purpose yards.
Yeah, he made a bad decision towards the end of the first half, threw an interception, which in retrospect really hurt them because they were up 10.
Right.
And actually looked like they were going to step on the gas and kind of separate from Cal there. But, you know, he's young. You know what I mean? I'm sure most of you know, but redshirt means that you were able to practice with the team last year, but you weren't eligible to play.
Mm-hmm.
So he's had a year of practice under his belt now, but now he's got 4 years of eligibility.
Right.
So if he stays to his junior, senior year,
right.
I mean, look out. You're talking, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but he looks like he's got that Heisman quality.
He totally,
because he can put up 400 yards a game.
He's got that college mold all over him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so why think of, let's not even project his professional status. He looks like a great college quarterback.
Great college quarterback to come.
So it's getting down in the game. They're back to within one touchdown, Texas is. And then with about a minute and change left, from about the 45-yard line, Hurd takes off, and this guy's fast, and he tied the game up. Here's how it sounded.
Here's Hurd. They blitz. Quarterback draw. First down. Hurd. It's a sideline. Taking it. Whoa! The Chiefs touchdown, Texas. Woo!
That's Gus Johnson on the call. Gus calling it like it was a Texas home broadcast.
Right.
He gets a little carried away for the home team on occasion.
He does.
He's not a bad broadcaster, but I do like a little bit somewhere in the middle when each team scores.
Right.
What can you do? So that made it 45-44 with like a minute left?
Yeah, maybe 40 seconds.
Yeah, and the NFL has moved the extra point back, which is stupid, The college has not, so you assume extra points. You know, you don't even really pay attention. So Nick Rose, kicker for Texas, strolls up, 45-44 Cal lead. This to tie it, and it didn't go well for Nick Rose.
Oh, he missed it! Unbelievable! That poor kid.
Bless his heart.
Bless his heart.
Bless his heart, noobs.
It's funny because he goes on to say, even if you're a Cal fan, you still got a feel for him. And I'm thinking to myself, well, no, maybe. Not so much. Maybe, but maybe on Tuesday.
Maybe a couple days later. Yeah.
But at that moment, you're ecstatic. Because you don't want to go to overtime with Texas. They had scored three consecutive possessions.
And yeah, Cal was going to get the ball back with, I think, like a minute 10 left. And you never know. But yeah, that was not looking good if they had tied the game.
And there's a couple things that are funny to me about that missed extra point is because he didn't just miss it. He didn't like graze the post. He missed it badly.
He chunked it.
I mean, it was bad. Yeah. It was like my golf swing.
It kind of looked like, like you were teeing off and you shanked it, right?
Right.
Yeah, just like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And another thing I thought was interesting is I saw today that there's internet videos of him nailing 80-yard field goals.
Right.
You know,
right.
Granted, there's nobody in front of him.
Right.
You know, it's just him alone on the field.
It's just
but it's not like he doesn't have a good leg.
It was his third career missed extra point, so it's a bad time to have your worst kicking moment of your career.
It can really be a liability in college. I mean, it's bit Alabama in the past, last couple of years.
It's the weakest aspect of the college game, far and away, because there's just, you don't have a lot of options. It's a hard thing to do, and there's not a lot of people striving to do it.
No.
You know? Like, if you're a golden leg, the odds are you probably chose to play soccer. Maybe you get a couple guys over that want to kick, but, like, that's, if your leg is what you're using athletically,
right,
I wouldn't want to be a kicker.
No.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, because, you know, you had some of those guys coming over actually from soccer, and maybe you're doing it for a paycheck.
Maybe a paycheck,
you know, in the NFL.
Yeah, but you see, kicker's a rough life because you get all this trash heaped on you when you do something wrong. And, yeah, you get a little glory if you nail something in the clutch every now and again. But not equal to the misery you're going to get.
No, it's so unbalanced.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, I mean, they love you for a second. The team pats you on the head and stuff. But when you're back in the locker room, man, you're going to be ignored in the corner most likely.
And
you know what I mean?
There's not a lot of Vinatieri's out there. You're not seeing a lot of people wearing kicker jerseys.
No.
It's not a fan favorite.
I saw a lady wearing one of those in the airport one day, and I couldn't believe it.
Right.
I mean, I appreciate it. He won helped win two Super Bowls for the Patriots, but still.
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
It's a tough life. I mean, I'm excited though, man. I grew up, and we might have mentioned it before. The climate for college athletics, major college athletics, is not the same in the Bay Area as other places. You know, the South and even the East Coast with basketball and stuff. It's just a different thing. There's a lot of options in metropolitan life, and people don't have to focus as much on college athletics if that's what they're into, as opposed to if you live in rural Alabama or wherever. You know what I mean?
Right.
That being said, Cal is the one team growing up that I actually enjoyed rooting for as a kid, that my family did. And they just haven't been very good at football or basketball over these many years. And I forget sometimes how much I can really get into Cal games. And with them being 3-0 and Goff playing well, like, I found myself, like, really, I was into it. Like, it was a Niner game or something. And,
right.
And I forget that. It just kind of comes out.
That's cool.
Do you still have any old feelings like that?
Oh, well, you know, I went to the University of Alabama.
Yeah.
I didn't wind up graduating from there. But I still, you know, live and die with the Crimson Tide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, little bum that they lost to Ole Miss at home the other night. But at the same time, they lost to Ole Miss last year.
Right.
And still made the playoffs. So I'm not drastically worried.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the SEC is going to get two teams in, though.
Yeah.
So I think Ole Miss is going to wind up having to lose to LSU. Alabama's going to have to win out. But we'll see. It's early. We'd be remiss, since we're talking about Bay Area college sports, we'd be remiss to not mention Stanford
beating USC.
A big upset. 10-point underdog. And they went down into Los Angeles and just kind of ran all over them.
Yeah, because SC coming in was what, ranked number six or
they
something like that?
They were sixth in the country. And interesting stat, the last five times that Stanford is going back to 2008, the last five times that they've gone to USC and USC was ranked, they're 5-0.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
That's pretty wild.
That's pretty wild.
I mean, and Stanford's a team that for the past couple years has had a lot of trouble scoring points. And to roll in there and put up a good offensive performance against a top flight team is it's pretty unexpected.
I think it definitely was, especially because, you know, they just hadn't started out the year very well. They went to Northwestern and lost.
Right.
You know, and I think people, you know, maybe thinking, okay, you know, Jim Harbaugh's been gone for, you know, a few years now, but maybe we're starting to think, okay, this is kind of the end. But, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, the Pac-12 is kind of wide open. Really good game coming up on Saturday night, prime time, 5 o'clock our time, UCLA and Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Number 9 versus number 16. So that's going to kind of help figure stuff out, at least early in the Pac-12 South.
Pac-12's got a lot of good teams. Like
no great teams.
Maybe not one that's going to run away that we can see right now,
right,
but a lot of good teams.
And I think Oregon's going to get better. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't fault them for going into East Lansing and losing to Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State's ranked number 2 right now.
Yeah.
So that loss looks good. It's going to look better and better as the season progresses.
Right.
Because I don't see Michigan State losing to anybody except for Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even sure if they're going to do that, the way Ohio State played this weekend against Northern Illinois.
Right.
I mean, they barely beat a MAC team that they were favored by 34, and I don't want to bring too much into point spreads because, you know, it's not so much about how much they're going to win by, it's about trying to get an amount of betting in.
Yeah, Cardell didn't have a real good
Cardell looked game. Bad. Yeah. Barrett looked bad. Their offense just, I mean, every time Northern Illinois needed to stop, they got it. You know, so I don't know. It's early.
Yeah.
We got a lot of college football left.
We do. And I've got Bears fever.
You do?
Yeah. And also let me mention that
it's not contagious, is it?
I don't know. It might be. Watch out. For many years, recently, once the Pac-12 network came out, they started blacking out regional Pac-12 games.
Yeah.
So I couldn't watch even bad Cal games that I wanted to see on TV.
So that's stupid. Why
didn't have the Pac-12 network?
Yeah.
But I think some of that's changed a little bit. I still get the Pac-12 network now. But, like, I got to watch that nationally televised game. They may not be on CSN Bay Area on the weekends like they should be.
Should be.
Because that's why CSN Bay Area and California Bay Area are showing, like, Delaware Villanova.
Unbelievable.
They do that every weekend because they can't get the rights to show the local games.
That's so
stupid.
Isn't
that crazy?
Yeah, no, I know. I was flipping through, 27 and 34, the two Bay Area, you know, CSNs. And like you said, yeah, it was, like, Old Dominion versus, like,
I mean,
Boston U.
I like the Blue Hens as much as the next guy.
As much as anybody.
Yeah.
But come on. I mean, the Fighting Blue Hens, that's the home of Joe Flacco. I mean, get out of town.
It's the home of John Sprecher, my grandfather.
Well, there you go. Even better. Even more poignant to the show.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, it's ridiculous because that's what you'd think. You'd think, okay, CSN Bay Area. Now we're going to get some Stanford games, some Cal games.
Yep. It used to be that way.
And it should be that way. And
yep.
Let me ask you a quick question. I don't want to harp on this, but you do get Pac-12 because I was searching for it.
I get Pac-12. It's part of whatever sports package I have. I don't even know what's happening with Comcast half the time. I have to call them every month just to make sure my bill doesn't go up.
Okay, because I get SEC, which is cool, but I was looking for Pac-12 and I couldn't find it.
But anyway. It's out there. But yeah, we digress. But I did buy tickets to see Cal Oregon State in November, which was one of the only Saturdays I could really make sure I could commit to on my schedule, and I'm stoked. Me and my folks are going to go.
Awesome.
So that's going to be great. And then let's veer off into baseball land for a bit and maybe come back and touch on college again before we split. I got one topic in particular. We can kind of go off on this.
Let me guess. Innings limit.
Innings limit. Matt Harvey, Scott Boras. This is crazy. For those that haven't heard about this controversy, Matt Harvey is one of the young studs for the Mets pitching staff that he had season-ending surgery last year, missed a whole season basically. He's come back strong, but he's got an innings limit now put on by his agent, Scott Boras.
Well, it was the doctor.
Doctor, okay, right. But Boras is he's the shouting board. You know, like, he's where this stuff really makes headlines.
Right.
And, you know, here we are in approaching October. The Mets are in first place. The Mets have looked dominant. And all of a sudden, it's coming up. Well, Harvey's got 180 innings limit. He's at 171 coming into yesterday's game. We can't push him past it because he says so. And now we got to figure out how we're going to try and work this system going into the postseason. And who even knows then? And we had this happen with Steven Strasburg just a few years ago, mind you, in 2012 when he came back from surgery. And it really...
They just shut him down.
They shut him down because they started him in April as a regular starter. Any limit came up, and they shut him down, didn't use him in the postseason, wound up losing in 7 games to the Cardinals. And
5. They've never made the
championship. Was it 5?
Yeah, they have not made a league championship series.
Oh, it was 5 games in the DS.
It was the
pardon
divisional.
Me, the DS. Yeah, and then the Cardinals got beat by the Giants.
Yeah.
And that was a series where, had they been able to start Strasburg, they probably would have won that series because they had to bump guys up in the rotation. Mm-hmm. It didn't work out.
Yeah, you're looking at getting him in game one and game five potentially.
Right, right. And who knows what's going to happen with – last night they pulled Matt Harvey after five innings with like a 2-0 lead or whatever.
And then they got bombed.
And then they got bombed. They wound up losing 11-2 or something. Yeah. And it just is such a recipe for disaster and absurdity this late in the season to be screwing around with your rotation like that for the thought that this might help me someday if I pitch 20 innings less.
Well, I understand the fear of like burning your arm out. You're a young guy. You're looking at possibly making, you know, tens to maybe even $100 million in your career if you're a guy like this. I get it. But my problem with it is, and he's not the only one on that staff, because you got Noah Syndergaard. Mm-hmm. They just skipped one of his starts.
Yep.
I believe DeGrom is either a rookie or a second-year guy, and they're talking about skipping his starts.
Yep.
Now, thank God for them. They've got a deep rotation with Steven Matz back off the DL. They got Bartolo Colon. They're spot starting Logan Verrett tomorrow. And they've even got Jonathan Neese, who's capable.
He's okay.
He's capable. But my problem with it, Jake, is that like if you know – first of all, actually I have two problems with it. One, innings limit is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, because it really should be – if you're going to put a limit, should be pitches. Because we all know that sometimes you pitch 25 pitches in an inning.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get out of there in five.
Yep.
And so let's first of all, I'm big on limits anyway. It should really be about how your arm feels.
Yeah.
But if you know from the beginning of the season that the doctor has recommended that it's 180 innings, okay, you know that basically every starter is going to get close to, unless he goes on the DL, he's going to get 31 to 32 starts a year. So why don't you start skipping them in April and May?
Well, it's exactly right. I mean, if that's how serious they are about it, you're crazy to start them in April. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You got to plan that you have to assume that you're going to be in contention. Otherwise, what's the point?
Exactly. See, that's the whole point. They said, well, we didn't want to get too far behind in the beginning. Well, no. You have to assume you're going to be in contention at the end.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
And they were far behind in the beginning anyway.
They were. That's the thing. They were getting crushed. They were like seven games behind until like a week before they picked up Cespedes.
So that's the Mets screw up. And then you have this – I don't even know if you can use the word screw up – just kind of abomination – of now a trend via doctor/agent where young pitchers are putting their, I don't want to say their future, but their perceived future ahead of what is best for the team that
now.
Season. The whole point of being on a team and playing a sport is to win.
I couldn't agree more.
So if you're physically capable of performing and helping your team win right now, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, it's not as if you're like, well, can you imagine a football player saying, well, you know what? I haven't had any concussions this year, but I feel like I might have some more in the future.
So I'm going to sit out the playoffs.
I'm going to sit out the rest of this season. I'm not going to retire. I'm just going to sit out the rest of this season.
So then I might play 10 years instead of 8.
Yeah. Or like, you know what? My knee feels pretty good in basketball right now, but God, it did hurt last year. I'm just going to take the rest of the playoffs off, and I'll see you at opening day next season.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
No. I mean, the way Popovich does it with the Spurs, he rests Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan, but he does it from the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And he will rest them on, like, when they play either back-to-backs, or sometimes the NBA is trying to get rid of this. They play 4 and 5 nights sometimes. So.
And that's because they're all 40.
Yeah, and Pop does it strategically, and that's fine. I have no problem with that. He does it so that they are ready for the playoffs.
Right.
You know what I mean? And what, you know, I don't want to put the blame on Terry Collins or God, the GM, Sandy Alderson. I don't want to put the blame on them. Well, I do, actually. No, I do. Not Boris so much. I mean, Boris maybe should, you know.
I think they underestimated how serious guys like this now are.
Well, okay. And the other thing, too, is as far as the team aspect, you know, ever since that Strasburg shutdown, they made the playoffs once since then, mm-hmm. lost that series.
Oh, yeah. And Strasburg has really been headed downhill aside from, you know, random outings of brilliance. He's not been some shutdown pitcher consistently.
And the thing, too, that you mentioned earlier about 20 more innings, I mean, literally, let's say he gets – they're not going to play the wild card game.
Right.
So at the most, they would play 19 games if they play the limit of 5 games, 7 games, and 7 games
right.
to the end of the World Series. That's 19 games.
Right.
So you're looking at a possibility of 4 more starts.
Mm-hmm. Because they have a deep rotation.
Because they have a deep rotation. So
he doesn't have to pitch. You know, he doesn't have to go Bumgarner.
He doesn't.
At all. And he wouldn't be expected to.
Nor could he, I don't think, honestly.
No. I mean, it's like...
But he doesn't have to. He could go every fifth day.
Right.
And with the playoffs the way that they are, there's days off in between.
Right.
He could literally pitch like one every 7 days.
Right.
So this whole idea of like we're going to ruin this guy's arm for 20 more innings, I agree with you. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that's saying, that's going if they actually, all those series go to their limit.
Right. I mean, and let's pay some respect to pitchers that... through an entire career
away
and never won a World Series.
Oh, right, yeah.
And
it's hard.
How many of those guys would say, you know what, I would gladly go back in time and sacrifice
half my career,
5 of my years or whatever, if I could have just had that one World Series win.
I bet you probably 90% of the guys would
say
that.
It's just crazy to me.
Yeah, no, it is crazy because, I mean...
I worry about it becoming a trend, but then I also think to myself, I bet you there's young pitchers right now in the big leagues that look at Matt Harvey and Scott Boras and the things that they're doing together in Strasburg, and I bet there's some young guys that think, they're crazy.
Yeah.
Send me out there.
Right.
You think Madison Bumgarner would be like, yeah, I got a 180 limit now. My arm's a little tired.
Not in a million years.
No way. There are.
He would hogtie the GM, stuff him in a closet, and go out there to pitch.
And there are plenty of dudes like Madison Bumgarner in the head where they want to go out there. They want to pitch until their arm falls off.
That's the thing. There's guys out there still, thank God, that are just diehard competitors. And I would say most of the guys are. And I don't want to call Matt Harvey out because I don't really know Matt Harvey. But he did kind of back up what Boras had said and was definitely sounding concerned.
Yep.
Whereas if I'm in there, I'm like, no, I'm going out and taking my start. I'm taking my turn in the rotation.
Right.
And we're going to go out and we're going to win this World Series.
Right, because I think they have a legitimate shot to contend for the World Series.
Absolutely.
You never know what's going to happen in the postseason, but I consider them legitimate contenders to win.
Absolutely. They've scored the most runs in the NL since the Cespedes pickup, you know, at the trade deadline, and they are a dynamic offense now. They've got a really good rotation. It's deep. You know, they don't have like a Kershaw and a Greinke at the top necessarily, but you go down 3, 4, and 5, and they're better than everybody else's 3, 4, and 5.
Right.
And they're better than most 1 and 2, to be honest with you.
Yep.
Pittsburgh, I mean, you got Garrett Cole. St. Louis is sliding big time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Mets are right there. You know, they've got a chance. And, you know, this is almost to me kind of like there's an analogy here with like the analytics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, analytics is such a big part of the game now where like we throw out like heart and guts and like who's
chemistry
hot.
And
chemistry. You know, it's all about
aspects.
Numbers.
Yeah.
And I feel like now we're getting like this medical analytical like thing that's happening now as opposed to like just asking Matt Harvey, looking him in the eye and say, can you go out there and give us what you got?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Leaving it up to the doctors and the agents?
Yeah. Crazy. Insane.
Right?
It really bothers me.
Yeah.
It really does. But
it bothers me because I picked the Mets to win the World Series. I got $100
on
it.
I placed that bet for you.
Yes, you did. Thank you. Killing me.
Okay, we're finishing up here on Say Hey. Gonna let you know that it is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Chico's newest restaurant, Buffalo Wild Wings, featuring 36 beers on tap, wall-to-wall HD TVs with nonstop sports, wings, and more at 801 East Avenue, open every day 11 a.m. till midnight. More info at buffalowildwings.com. And then we got somebody here. We got iGreen. Live in a bubble with clean air, comfort, and clean energy for your home. iGreen turns a house into a healthy environment by addressing the core components: heating and cooling, insulation and repair, insulation, windows, daylighting, water heating, and solar energy to create comfort and eliminate energy bills. iGreen finds the rebates and will file the paperwork. Tax credits and financing are also available. More info by calling iGreen at 230-0656. The Energy Efficiency Division of Green Construction Services. I think that's the first time I read that one.
That's the first time I've heard it.
Yeah, iGreen. I like that
name. Sounds interesting.
Sounds very interesting. Noobs, on the way out, we got about a minute. Give us a little more of what games you might be looking forward to in the college football world coming up this week.
Okay, college football. You know, honestly, I mean, besides the Arizona-UCLA game, there's not a whole lot of top 25 matchups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, interested to see now, you know, Michigan State's number 2. How do they handle success? How does Ohio State bounce back? What do they do as far as the quarterback position? But if I could kind of slide off that real quick, I'm actually really looking forward to a couple series here in Major League Baseball.
Oh, good.
Toronto and the Yankees are playing.
Yep. And it's only 2.5 still.
2.5. Yeah. It's right there.
It's right there.
We got 2 weeks of baseball left, exactly. And also,
Anaheim and Houston are playing a three-game series tonight, three or four, and then Houston plays Texas at the end of the week.
Yep.
So it's do or die for the Astros.
It is. They're 2.5 back. They're still in the wild card, but this series against
They're both huge.
Anaheim's only 2.5 out of that same spot.
Exactly.
So it's like it's do or die for the Astros right now.